from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Yeah,
as we go through this week, we want to see our ones get more reps. So we're taking through even longer move the ball periods, and we want to see our starters get some reps this week versus Pittsburgh.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryans yesterday on the NFL Network. And we will see starters on the field on Friday against the Steelers. 6 o'clock Houston time kick, 3 o'clock pregame show. Gets going with me and Seth, and of course, we'll be joined on that pregame show, as we are before every Texan game, by our next guest, who's joining us, kind enough to join us at 8 o'clock each day this week while the Texans are at practice in Ohio to give us his impressions of what he saw out there. Texan sideline reporter and founder of FootballTakeover.com, John Harris, joining us. Johnny, great to talk to you as always. I hear that the offense looked significantly better yesterday than it had over its last few practices here in Houston. Is that what you saw yesterday?
That's absolutely 100% truth. I thought the offense finally had a little bit of a rhythm throwing the ball. They had time to throw. CJ was dialed in yesterday. He had probably three throws that were like, yo, that's what we love to see. Now, defensively, some guys, you know, banged up, not in the practice, Neil Hunter, Will Anderson, et cetera. And those two have really created some issues off the edge. But, you know, just to see the offense kind of find a little bit of a gear, you know, it was nice. And CJ, I don't know, maybe it's being back in Ohio. I don't know what it is, but he was on fire all throughout the day. So that was really good to see kind of the offense start to find its rhythm again and continue to find it as we go through preseason. And yeah, as D'Amico said, we'll see the starters, which will be nice. But I hope it's one series. I don't want to mess around with CJ back there too much. I don't know if the Steelers will play their guys. But, you know, it's a little similar to the Steelers game last year, when we didn't have Laramie Tunsil, and I think Titus Howard was at guard at that, by that point. So you're going with Austin Deculus and Jerron Christian against Highsmith and Watt, and they didn't have any sacks. I don't want to play with fire again. So those guys are playing. I want to, you know, just get a series, you know, look good on that series, go down, put some points on the board, and then get out of there.
John, one guy we've talked about this morning is Cade Stover, the rookie tight end. And I, you know, I don't have the All-22, and it's driving me insane. But there were some nice instances of him doing some good things as a blocker in that game. He also looked like a rookie a couple times. Where were you both on how he blocked in that game and what you've seen from him in camp overall?
Yeah, you know, I feel like he's done a nice job. I still think he's adjusting to obviously seeing NFL defensive ends. I mean, the guy didn't play tight end for a long time at Ohio State. He only did it the last couple of years. But he's at least got a toughness and a physicality that he's willing to do that. So there's some things that are going to get cleaned up. I think Juwar Jordan, there was a run by Juwar Jordan in the third quarter where Juwar probably could have made Cade's block right, if that makes sense. But because he kind of hesitated, then he tried to get outside. When the defensive end tried to get off of Cade, I think Cade kind of grabbed the outside. And I think he was the one that ended up being called for the holding penalty. But I think he continues to improve. And when you go back and you think about, you know, not only tight ends, but just rookies, for the Texans, and I know the in the 11 years I've been on the sideline, you see them, you get excited about them, and then, oh, man, rookie's gone for 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks or 2 months, you know, dealing with an injury, and you don't get them back, and they don't get to go through the training camp and go through preseason. And then they don't get a chance to stack days doing things positively that can really make them, you know, better players down the road. But Cade's done that. Cade's been there. He's been, you know, at one point in the game on Thursday, I thought he got up a little slowly. And I was like, oh, no. Because Quatorion had already gone out. They didn't have Dalton Schultz or Brevin Jordan dressed. And I'm thinking, oh, God, he's the only tight end. So Troy Hairston did pick up some of those reps at tight end. But Cade ended up being okay, practiced yesterday. And I think one of the things about, you know, with Teagan banged up and Brevin hasn't practiced, I don't know if he's got something going on as well. Cade's getting some reps with the ones, especially when they go 12 personnel. And I like that look with Schultz and Stover. I like that look. So it just gives him an opportunity. Okay, now he gets the big boys. Let's go. But at least he's got familiarity with the quarterback, and that helps him. But I think Cade's really made strides day after day. I think as a blocker, I still think there's more to be done. But I trust him probably more so than I trust any other that's not Teagan Quatorion. But then again, you can't really trust that Teagan's going to be healthy enough to be on the field. So, right now, you know, he's got to be that guy. You know, Schultz will do some things to surprise people at times. But if he gets a physical defensive end or an outside linebacker, that's just not going to be good for the run game. I'd rather that be Cade, and that's got to come along a little bit further, but it's at least moving the right direction because of his physicality.
John Harris joining us live from Ohio at Texans practice. Texans on the field yesterday. Offense looked good, as Johnny pointed out. Johnny, as far as the game coming up this Friday, we'll talk more about practice, I'm sure, but as far as like the game coming up this Friday, Seth and I were talking about this earlier, I don't know that there's a player who I'm more looking forward to or intrigued by seeing in a preseason game than Damian Pierce on Friday. How much of the positivity surrounding Pierce and how he's looked in these practices where you can't tackle, really, and bring guys to the ground, what's your optimism level that we'll see a different Damian Pierce on Friday?
I'm fairly optimistic. You know, the one thing about, you know, when you're, I don't want to say learning a new skill, but it kind of feels like he's learning a new skill, and that is, how do you run in your style in this offense? And I think that's what Damian is trying to find. And I think that's what he's got to keep in mind is, you know, there's a way you run. You have to be decisive and get vertical now. But once you get vertical, turn back into Damian Pierce, if you will. And that is, there's going to be somebody that gets in that hole and wants to challenge you. You run through them. So I think that's kind of the challenge for Damian is, he's got a certain style, and it's a style that we all like, and it's a style that defenders do not like to face. They don't like to face a guy 5'9", 215 with that sort of power and that relentlessness as he runs. They want running backs to just kind of take a hit and go down. That's not going to be Damian, but Damian's got to merge those two things of his style with how they want to run in this offense. I think he's moving closer towards that each and every day. I think he also has to have a run or two in this preseason that gives him that confidence of like, yes, I have learned how to do this, and I can do it the way that I'm comfortable running. And I think that's what we've seen in training camp thus far. And just kind of talking to him offhandedly, just going off the field and such, he sounds and he feels and sounds like a different guy. Like last year, you could tell his confidence in taking a shot. And he just kind of didn't feel like the same guy. Now you kind of feel like you've got that same energy, that same juice. And now you want to see that in a preseason game. I think he needs to see that in a preseason game to know and to be validated. All the work that he's done over the last year and change has made him the runner that the Texans want him to be. But it's a style that he's comfortable with too. Because eventually you get in a game and you realize you're just going to revert back to the things you know how to do. So hopefully what he's done with all this work is created habits that get him vertical right now, and then he can be the runner that he wants and running through tackles and, you know, turning a 2-yard gain into a 6-yard gain, et cetera. And if he does that, I think he's going to have confidence moving forward that he can be the guy he was a couple of years ago.
Speaking with John Harris from the Houston Texans and FootballTakeover.com. John, the third starting linebacker position the Sam linebacker technically, but basically just who's the third best linebacker on this team right now, or at least your favorite, the favorite at this point?
Jalen Petrie. I say that happened just, but you know, the Texans are going to play nickel, what, 80% of the time, maybe?
Yeah.
So it ends up being Jalen Petrie. If Petrie is going to end up playing the nickel, if it's got to be three true linebackers, the best thing you can possibly do if you play three linebackers, then you're anticipating run. Play Neville Hewitt. Neville Hewitt's as good against the run as it gets. Now, I don't know how they'll do that. But first of all, you need Christian Harris back, so you got to figure that part out. Because once you get Christian Harris back, you have Christian and Aziz. I think Henry has had a really good camp. Henry Toto, I think, is at a really, really good camp. So he could be that third guy, because I think Henry's also got the speed, agility, and the know-how and understanding to get into pass coverage and be effective. Now, he doesn't feel like a typical Sam linebacker, but at that point, that might be the best kind of merging of two worlds, if you will, the nickel world and kind of your base, you know, old school 4-3 world. So I think that's probably the way they would go. But right now, you know, Henry's got to pick up the slack at Christian's spot, and then the third guy has been it's been a few guys. Some days it's Deshaun Phillips. Some days it's Neville Hewitt, because Neville can play the run really well. And when you got three on the field, that's what you're anticipating. You just don't want Neville in coverage, and I think that ends up being an issue if he is in coverage. But right now, I think I would probably go with Neville next to Henry and Aziz until Christian comes back.
Was Toa Toa banged up for the first preseason game?
No.
No, okay. So that just...
No, I mean...
They
just... It was a... I mean, I guess they... I don't know. They considered him a starter and held him. He was not injured at all.
Okay.
He was ready to go, but they just held him back.
Yeah, okay, so they held him out. I was wondering why he hadn't played at all. But I guess, yeah, that might be one of the most telling signs right there.
Yeah, exactly, and it's interesting that you say that, Seth. That is, you know, looking back at Thursday night and you see the guys that ended up not playing, you kind of get a feel for, oh, okay, I know, like you said, Henry Toa Toa not being, you know, he's not hurt, he's been healthy, and he didn't suit out. So that gives you a pretty good indication of what they feel about Henry and the impact that they feel he's going to have this year.
John Harris joining us live from Cleveland, Ohio, where the Texans are practicing the next couple days. Johnny, maybe I'm holding Tank Dell to the standard he established last year as a rookie, where he, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere. Like, we knew what Tank could do coming out of Houston, but he had some practices last year that were like, wow, practices. And I, at least back here in Houston, He didn't really have any practices like that. He looks perfectly healthy. He looks like he's moving great. I guess, can you give us, 11 practices in, what your assessment has been of Tank Dell so far from what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, Tank has been fine. I feel like there have been practices throughout, just watching, you know, every one of them. It feels like there's been a Diggs day. There's been a Nico day. Mm-hmm. And there's been a Tank day. Like, it's almost what we talked about all offseason. Like, hey, who's the number one wide receiver this year? And you're like, well, it's the open one. And it's kind of been that way. There have been different guys for different days. You know, yesterday was more a CJ day, but CJ was just hitting everybody. I mean, he was kind of spreading the wealth. He probably went to, I think he went to Diggs a couple times, when Tank made a couple of really nice catches on the sideline. And so he really kind of spread the wealth yesterday. I mean, yesterday was probably, think back just from a passing game perspective, the way that CJ got everybody involved, I feel like that's the way I'd like to see this offense run. Because you look up and I look back at my notes, and it's like, you know, Tank had a couple of really nice catches on the sideline. Nico made a really nice catch in the end zone, sideline catch. You know, Diggs had a slot fade where they tried to man up, play cover one, and man up him with Jalen Petrie. And immediately CJ is like, no, I'm stealing slot fade here all day. And just stuck a dime on him on the sidelines. And so it was kind of, yesterday was kind of what I think the offense really wants to be, like in a game. Tank, you get a little bit. Diggs, you get a little bit. Nico, you get a little bit. And we keep the defense off track because they don't know which guy is our number one guy. And, you know, we've got this one cover corner that's a stud, you know, the Broncos, Patrick Surtain. Well, okay, if you're Surtain, who are you covering? You know, which guy are you going to cover? Because Diggs will take you into the slot. Nico will body you. and Tank can probably run by you. So they're going to, teams matching up with those three is going to be tough. But I've not been, you know, disappointed at all with Tank, and really it's because I've looked at kind of the offense and how it's going to go. Like, there are going to be some games where Tank is 8 for 125 and Tutty or two. Mm-hmm. And then there are going to be games where he's maybe 3 for 36, mm-hmm, because Nico's 9 for 140, you know, and I think it's going to be spread that way. So I think there's also this kind of adjustment period of when are all three on the field together, what's the best way to use them when they're on the field together. And then, you know, CJ adapting to that, making sure that he's hitting the open guy. And I think that takes a little bit of work, you know, especially when you add in, you know, Steph to the mix. But I feel like yesterday was a really good indication of, you know, CJ got comfortable early and then he was just dotting the open guy. And I think that's the way it's going to be.
Am I reading too much into Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green looking good against backups? Or do you think that having that full contact tackle football kind of allowed something to click with them with their timing?
Well, what is it, Seth? I don't know that you can take positive assurance. I don't know if you can look at it and go, oh, they're going to be great. But at least you're not looking at it going, oh, my God, they look bad against bad. I think looking good against, I don't say bad, but looking good against backups, okay, that's at least positive that they weren't the other way. I don't think you can take any positive reassurance out of it. But I don't know if you can take negative reassurance like, oh, man, they look terrible. No, they look pretty good. I thought the left side actually worked pretty well together in the game. You know, Blake Fisher and Kenyon Green kind of working together. They worked on a stunt. It may have been on the touchdown throw, but I remember them working a stunt, passing off the twist, and it looked really good. Like, okay, these guys look like they've played together a little bit. But I don't know that you can take any positive reassurance from it. But at least you know, okay, there's a baseline of – they didn't let backups beat them. They were pretty overly competent against those backups. So I can feel good about that, that they can probably go to war against the starters and see how that goes. Now, this would be a pretty good test against Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh does play their starters, Keanu Benton is one of the better young inside players. So I think that's going to be a fun matchup for Juice. And here's the other thing, too. They're going to face a different front. So in facing a different front, Seth, you know this, that can create some issues with line calls. You know, who's got responsibilities for this? You know, Pittsburgh's going to do some different things up front, so they're going to have to adapt on the fly. And they're facing, I don't know if Cam Hayward will play. You know, he's coming off injury. I don't know if he'll play, but you still have Keanu Benton. You got to get, you got to block. So I think all of that really is a good thing for Juice and for Kenyon in particular to have that, to be able to work against the new front and kind of unscripted stuff. That really will make them, I think, better down the road. But I felt good about what they did. But I wasn't, you know, going out and, you know, celebrating with birthday cake that, oh, these guys have got this thing mastered. You know, it was backups. At least it wasn't the other way around. Like, oh my God, I'm terribly worried because they got beat by, you know, Larry Snyder. You know, some guy that just walked off the street from Utah State a week ago from the Bears. You know, they were able to handle that and do some good things. And so that's at least. You can feel positive about it, but I don't think you can feel like they've got the whole thing by the you-know-what.
Yeah, Johnny with a drive-by on poor Larry Snyder right there. What did he ever do to you, Johnny? Larry Snyder.
Well, no, I made him up. I made him up.
So okay, Larry okay. A fake He's guy, a fictitious so I guy. Okay, up. I was going to say, I'm yeah, like, man, I can make that was cold, bro. John Harris.
Guy's all I want.
Texan sideline reporter. You can get the Harris hits after practice. You can find yesterday's Harris hits, 35 notes about day 11 of training camp at HoustonTexans.com. And the Harris hits today, I'm sure, are going to be amazing as well for day 12 of training camp. Johnny, we'll talk to you tomorrow, man. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, boys, great to talk to you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Johnny. FootballTakeover.com as well is where you can find Johnny's work, too.
Real quick, just what John was talking about and facing a different front. The Steelers run a 3-4 defense, mm-hmm, which is it's a different set of challenges, and you got to count the guys differently, and the reads are a little bit different. So that is a good challenge. You're just facing a different defensive look in the base fronts than they have so far.
All right, let's circle over to the Astros in the next segment. Is this team running out of answers for the home stretch here? We will discuss that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I have a big concern that the Astros are kind of running out of answers here. Hopefully they get Verlander back. We'll hear from Justin Verlander in just a second. One thing we did not note earlier, Seth, and I don't know if this raises your concern level about Kyle Tucker. Oh. It raises mine a little bit. He's not even with the team on this trip. He's not even traveling with them right now.
I'm as pessimistic as you could be about Kyle Tucker. Yeah. I think that, honestly, if it is indeed compartment syndrome, basically where you just got swelling in your lower leg and it seizes everything up, it can be a real SOB to try to figure out. And it feels like right now at this point, they're dealing with something that they can't figure out. It's not that the doctors are idiots or anything like that. It's one of those medical conditions that sometimes just takes a long time to resolve. And the fact that he's still hobbled in some regard, I don't know what has to change for him to come back from it.
The worst part about not having Kyle Tucker is not having Kyle Tucker, the baseball player. The second worst part about Kyle Tucker being out this long are the stupid conspiracy theories that he's somehow staying out this long because of
a pending contract.
Yes. Yeah. That he's somehow withholding his services to demonstrate to the team just how valuable he is, as if they don't
know
already
that was
know.
A conspiracy theory.
It's out
See,
there, man.
You're
yeah.
like, I would give you the advice that I give to Simone Biles, which is like, just stay off social media. You don't have to let these people ruin your lives. You know, there's nothing you can say that will stop their from being a-holes on social media.
That's fair.
So,
I think the difference with me and Simone is she's letting it affect her mood personally. Like, while I seemed agitated right there, I do like the conspiracy theorists in terms providing a little bit of content for the show. You know, like, I'm okay with that part. Yeah.
So, do I think that Kyle Tucker is somehow using this as some kind of leverage in a contract negotiation? There's 0% of me that feels that way.
Same.
I don't. One of his best strengths as a player and as a future free agent, which he'll almost certainly be at some point, is his durability. This is a guy that what part of Kyle Tucker has ever struck you as a guy as like, oh, the vicious negotiator that will do anything it takes to get his way? That doesn't seem like Kyle Tucker.
No.
He's just a guy that goes out and doesn't miss baseball games typically.
If I had to predict, especially if Tucker misses the rest of the season, and I know it's not his fault, like he fouled a ball off his shin. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the next in a long
better
line.
Better bat control, it would have been a home run.
So, yeah, maybe. Yeah, but what I was going to say was I think I think Kyle Tucker's unavailability, especially if it lingers through the rest of the season, I think for a guy who's been through arbitration a couple times now with the team and it's gotten ugly each time, I think this could be, given the fact that this is his last arbitration year, which, look, Kyle Tucker was on track to be an MVP candidate this year, which means in arbitration, he was probably going to make somewhere in, conservatively, in the last year of arbitration, like the mid-20s somewhere. Like Shohei Ohtani, in his last year of arbitration with the Angels, made like $31 or $32 million. So adjust for inflation, adjust for the fact that Kyle Tucker's not Shohei Ohtani, but he's in that MVP neighborhood. And he was probably, like, in arbitration set to make somewhere in the mid-20s. I cannot wait. Let's get through the rest of the season. But once that part of the calendar rolls around, I'm super intrigued by what the offer from the Astros is going to look like versus what Kyle Tucker's camp thinks he is worth if he misses. I mean, he's already missed a ton of time. But if he misses so much time to where he can't play in the postseason, or if they don't make the postseason, all of those
things. I'd say they'd be... I don't know, you know, in arbitration, you never want to, you always got to, it's an interesting one, because I don't think it'll hurt his actual arbitration number at all. They usually in arbitration, they look at a player that's been resilient, like they'll take his high watermark.
Yeah. I agree with you.
So I don't think they'll bother with a low ball.
You don't think the Astros will?
I don't know.
That's what I'm with you. You and I are simpatico on the value of Kyle Tucker and what he should be worth. I'm not saying I'm anxious to see what the Astros offer him.
But if they lowball it, then they're just basically saying like, oh well, okay, we're gonna get screwed by the arbitration anyway. So I don't know. They have to play that game. It's I don't think they think that Kyle Tucker will jump to agree to a lowball offer because he's seen baseball mortality.
Yeah, no. Again, arbitration is the Astros present a number to the arbiter, and Kyle Tucker does. Right. I'm just saying I'm anxious to see. Like, Kyle Tucker's not going to take a lowball offer is my point.
Right.
The Astros have some financial distress going on with all these dead money contracts they've got. That's my point.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see. Justin Verlander has had a good week. He threw on Sunday. And he said he's back. He's starting to get back into a normal starter's routine.
I mean, I think we're on like a 5-6 day routine now, just kind of almost like spring training. Just, you know, getting in my routine, trying to build up pitch count and build up the up and down so that I can, you know, go out in the game and cover some innings.
You know, in that interview on Fox during the game on Saturday. He said they asked him about, like, you know, if you had to make some adjustments based on your age as to how your body recovers and everything. And he said he acted like, no, none of that. Nope, no. And yet at the same time, like, all right, yeah, but you're injured all the time and it's taken you a long time to come back. I feel like, yes, it is affecting you. Your age is, you're feeling it right now by virtue of the very fact that you're doing a dugout interview during a game. It's affecting you. You're old.
And this isn't the first injury this season either. Like, he didn't start the season. Like, he's multiple injuries.
His body is not responding the way that it used to. Yeah. One injury begets another injury. And
truth hurts sometimes, man. The truth hurts.
Yeah. But I'm the least... Actually, I'm not agitated by either him or Luis Garcia, just because I still look at them like found money. I put them off. You know, it's like if you just ignore some retirement account there and you almost forget about it, and then you remember like, oh, yeah, I got that coming to me someday.
Yeah.
That's how I've looked at both of those guys. And it would be nice if it was sooner rather than later, because we're running out of time here, but I'm not agitated with their situation.
I guess the issue with Verlander would be, well, let's play one more from Verlander. He said he's going to need some rehab starts.
You want to get back into the game as quick as possible and help the big league team, but, you know, you also don't want to go out there and hamstring anybody and only be able to go, you know, 3 or 4 innings. So, I think we're looking probably two rehab starts. To, you know, I threw 37 today, you know, and I let it go pretty good. So I count that as a start. And then, you know, if I go two more rehab starts, get my pitch count up to, you know, where I can throw in a big league game, you know, around 75 or 80, I think that's enough.
Okay, he got up to 94 on the gun in this last session he threw. I guess my question would be, Seth, do you Do you wish they hadn't made the Verlander trade last year? That would be my question. Like, you know?
No, because he's not. I think he's still one of your best options. As long as the Mariners keep helping the Astros out, then and you either win the division or make the wild card, he's one of your best options to actually have a successful playoff.
Yes.
And his salary is not as bad as Jose Abreu's salary. It's not as bad as Lance McCullers' salary. Like, the Mets are paying half his salary. So it hasn't been a drain on, it's not the Justin Verlander contract that's keeping you from making other moves. So that part of it is easy for me to swallow.
Yeah, I'm still cool with it. Neither of the prospects they sent over in that deal are tearing it up for the Mets right now. Yeah. And neither of those guys would be theoretically helping you win in 2024. I'm with you. Like, if Verlander comes back in the middle of August, or probably late August now, if he's got to do two rehab starts, and he's a prominent part of a rotation that gets you into the postseason, then adding to what he did last year when you got him at the end of the year, I think the trade's a success.
It's a little bit like what the Patriots and the Steelers have been good at over the years, which is one of their primetime marquee players leaves in free agency, is a disappointment for another team, and then comes back having already gotten paid, but comes back at a discounted rate. So you almost get the benefit of playing hardball with them without the hurt feelings. And I think that's what you get with Verlander. It's like, he's damaged goods in a lot of ways, but when healthy, he's still very, very good, and you're only paying half his salary. It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not bad. And he's a high-level player. Where does Ledmus Diaz fall on the names coming back into the Astros right now?
He's still there, isn't he?
Chandler Rome brought up some good points in his article about last night's game. Like, it's kind of depressing. Like, he listed, and then this is kind of like my theme coming into the segment. Like, I don't know what the answers are for this team right now. They're completely grab-bagging. Like, bringing a Ledmus Diaz in as some sort of utility guy to help, like, he's not good anymore. Like, Dana Brown's openly talking about calling up guys who've barely played any minor league baseball. You know,
you're keenly aware of the usage when it comes to pitchers, and we know that the Astros have three relievers who are in the top 10 of innings pitched. They've got three position players who are like in the top 25 for innings played. And it's basically their whole infield. Bregman, Pena, and Altuve.
Yep.
And it's not like I feel like any of those guys have desperately needed the load management or anything, but it's an indication that, man, they would have load managed Bregman more and Altuve more if they just flat out had options. But they don't have the options.
They don't.
And some of the play that you're seeing in the outfield right now, and I mean, just having to rely on Pedro Leon or whomever else, it's just dicey.
Yeah.
It's really, really dicey.
Yeah, but that's where Dana Brown is right now. Like, Trey Cabbage stinks. Chaz has been bad this year. Jake Myers has kind of turned back into the Jake Myers of old. Like, he's not hitting nearly to what he was back in May. And they've got no options. And Mauricio Dubon's been awful lately. He's 4 for his last 45. So the options, especially now that the trade deadline is done, is, okay, let's bring up Pedro Leon. Jonathan Singleton looks like he needs a break at first base. So what are your options? I don't know. I guess we bring up Shea Whitcomb, who was Rule 5 eligible last year. Like, anybody could have just stolen him from the Astros organization last year, and they didn't. Or Zach DiCenzo, who is a third baseman who's getting reps at first base. Like, they're running out of answers right now.
And I'll tell you what, though. It's just emotionally, that game last night, which would have been an awesome, it would have been fun. Would have been fun if the Astros had pulled that out. But they've got the bases loaded three times in the last four innings.
Yeah.
You come up with one run out of it, but it was a dribbler by Pena. This is just, it's maddening. You were being driven insane about it yesterday morning. And then the baseball god smote you even harder by giving you that, like, so many opportunities to just all but end the game in the top of an inning, but you've got the bases loaded in an extra innings game all those times, and my God.
Yep, it was rough, man. It's rough. Hopefully they get it back tonight. We'll see. Okay, I finally watched Hard Knocks offseason, the Giants Hard Knocks, and there was a moment in there that got me super excited about Nick Caserio and the Houston Texans. We will tell you what that is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so I finally watched the entirety of the Hard Knocks Giants offseason, and it's really good. There was a moment in there, Texans related. This might be, other than Devin Singletary getting a bunch of run in this thing, Seth, because he signed with the Giants, the next closest thing for Texan fans in there, and this is one that if I'm a Texan fan, it makes me feel really good about the front office, about Nick Caserio, and about Kamari Lassiter. When there's a sequence in there, and the audio's not great, otherwise I would play it. Like, I close my eyes for it. I'm like, all right, this doesn't translate on the radio, just the talking back and forth. You really need to see what's going on in the war room for the Giants. Yeah. But when the Texans and the Giants were picking like 47th overall, like so right about five or six picks after the Texans in the second round, and they were clearly chatting about cornerbacks. They wanted to draft a defensive back there.
Yeah.
And when Kamari Lassiter got picked at 42, Brian Daboll's reaction, like he leaned back in his chair, hands on his head, like there.
Okay.
At least for Daboll, like Kamari Lassiter going off the board was a big deal.
All right. Yeah. You know what? Okay. I'm glad that you watched it better with a keener eye than I did, because I was trying to figure out, they had Lassiter on the board there, but I guess I was watching Joe Shane. I was trying to figure out exactly, because they didn't say anything about Lassiter. It wasn't like they were like, oh, this is the guy we want or anything. Right. They specifically mentioned a couple other players. So, yeah, I didn't catch that part of it. All right, good. I was wondering what all the hubbub was about.
Yeah.
Because I saw it on social media. All right, that makes way more sense.
Now,
I was listening for the audio,
yeah,
so we could play it, and I didn't hear anything. So it was Daboll really wanted Lassiter. And I think Daboll especially, like, he's a classic, he's a football guy. You watch this Hard Knocks and you see, man, there is no polish to Daboll. He is just a grunting caveman of a football dude. And Lassiter is the kind of guy that appeals to grunting cavemen football dudes. He plays physical, you know?
No disrespect, D'Amico.
Yeah.
You grunting caveman.
Yeah, like this, yeah. D'Amico's like the caveman lawyer from the old SNL bit, you know?
He's an eloquent caveman.
Yeah. He's still got the caveman tendencies.
Yes.
He's just, he knows how to dress it up a little bit.
That's
but he
funny.
Still has that. Guys like Kamari Lassiter appeal to guys like D'Amico Ryans and Brian Daboll.
And Brian Daboll. Yeah, Daboll was, he was mad when he got sniped by Caserio right there with that Lassiter pick. I love that. As a Texan fan, it was great. All right. I want to see if you agree with this take about this Hard Knocks Giants offseason. Joe Shane, I think a lot of our audience has seen the clips that have come out, and up until this weekend, that's all I'd seen was the clips. And many of the clips, Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, looks either a little overwhelmed, uninformed, you know, like at times you can tell he's trying to play games with the owner here, who really wants to keep Barkley, and Shane's having to keep the owner at bay a little bit, or at least placate him that they might keep Saquon Barkley. I think having watched the whole thing, like, Joe Shane comes across better throughout the series than the Twitter cut-ups would indicate.
I disagree.
You do?
I think he's looked awful. I think that the whole Saquon Barkley situation ultimately looked like he was trying to convince his entire staff that nobody wanted Saquon Barkley and that nobody would be willing to give up any draft capital or anything else for Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
And there was one point where he talked about how the previous year when Saquon Barkley had been franchised, it took years off his life. It looked like he was just emotionally taxed by the Saquon Barkley stuff and he just wanted to be done with it. And I think some of the Twitter clips to me made some of the other players and other people look worse than they actually should have.
Oh, for sure.
So I think that Shane to me, and then the other one, and the big damning thing is that, I don't know, maybe the Mara family is too inbred by this point, and they're, now that they're like third or fourth generational wealth, they won't pick up on it. He's completely playing the owner the entire time.
For sure.
With the Saquon Barkley.
Yes. So
he's making it look to the owner like, yeah, they... where maybe there's a, you know, like, well, we'll try to keep him, when he had no intention of keeping him whatsoever.
Yeah.
But more than anything, I kept comparing it back to Nick. And Nick, who, like I've said multiple times, I would have caved so much earlier in the Deshaun Watson scenario. I would have just been awake at night thinking about, man, what happens if legally this thing really goes south and he's got zero value whatsoever? that I would not have held out long enough, or nor, you know, Nick created that auction like environment for Deshaun that ended up getting the Texans a really, really good offer from the teams that were in on that auction, that I don't think that Caserio would have been emotionally beaten down by the Saquon Barkley
situation. I don't know. The auction thing is interesting. I don't know that I would have thought to use the allowing of communication with Deshaun Watson to be a leverage point to where you got the offers. Okay, you can talk to him, but let me know what you're offering first.
There's, like, there's an entry fee.
Yeah.
He created an entry fee. There was a cover charge to enter that sweepstakes.
Yeah.
And like that ended up being the trade compensation was the cover charge that Nick charged to enter the conversation.
Okay. So I guess I got to ask myself, would Joe Shane have been able to do that?
Yeah, probably Joe Shane would have pulled the Seth Payne.
He would have
bailed for whatever the Dolphins had offered. Yeah. You want to give me a third round pick? Yeah. Yes, I just want to be done with it. Yeah. I'm so tired. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Now, keep in mind, my take was Joe Shane looked better than he did in the Twitter clips. He looked awful in the Twitter clips. I'm not saying he's, you know, I'm not saying he's Nick or he's Bill Polian or anybody like that.
What was it about watching the entire series that made you feel like Joe Shane actually did a better job?
Because I feel like there were some, I don't remember specifics, but I feel like there were some takes he had on players or position groups. I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. See, like, there were some points in this where he looked like a sensible GM, is my point.
You were gone the week that we played a lot of the clips from this.
Yeah.
I thought the funniest thing about all of it was Daboll just basically not understanding the free agency process.
That was great.
That was, which I kind of, again, it made me like Daboll. I felt like, you know what? This is a guy that trusts the GM to do the GM stuff.
Yeah.
But then there were times where Shane was asking Daboll questions about prospects, and it felt like maybe Daboll had watched a few cut-ups on YouTube or something. It didn't feel like he even knew who some of the free agency prospects were.
You know what might have moved me on Joe Shane? The scene towards the end where he went home and played Uno with his kids at the kitchen table. I'm like, oh, this guy seems like a good dude. He may be a horrible GM, but he plays Uno with his kids. At least for Hard Knocks, he did.
No, it sounded like, based on the conversation they were having at their dinner table, it sounded like he'd talked to his kids other times too. This is a GM that actually talks to his children at least once a month.
Right. Like, his sixth grade son is like super psyched that his dad's the GM of the Giants, you know, like he's talking about transactions and things.
Says as much about his classmates as anything else. I always feel bad for the children of coaches and GMs.
Dude,
probably have to deal with all kinds of crap. You know, people, they're like, hey, why is your dad a moron?
Right.
Especially with like some thick New Jersey accent.
Dude, right. In that part of the country? Oh my God.
My dad says back in the day, we would have taken care of him the old school way.
I love your
dad. He'd be sleeping in a swamp. Parsnippany.
Ben, Seth the New Yorker is the best thing, isn't it? It's the best.
Yes.
We like that.
Or British Seth.
Or British Seth.
British Seth, it sounds like no region. It sounds more like a Game of Thrones accent than anything else.
Yeah. It sounds like a New Yorker playing a Game of Thrones character.
Oy! Yeah.
if you could pick one of the three Hard Knocks franchises for the Texans to be on, the off-season one that we just talked about, the traditional, I'll call it, the original Hard Knocks, which is training camp, which they've been on before, or this in-season one that is now a full division of teams but used to be one team, which would you pick?
I think I like the off-season the most because I think that's the closest glimpse we've got into the actual process of an NFL team.
Sausage getting made.
You saw the sausage getting made. Yeah. I'm really surprised that the Giants allowed the access that they did into all those private conversations and everything. And they're just, you're laying yourself open to, man, the moves that don't work out can be microanalyzed 100 times more than they were in the past. So, yeah, I thought it was fascinating. I really enjoyed it.
How about I know you saw this. How about the Giants big board showing up on screen, like where people were able to like screen grab it and post it on social media?
I don't. I guess I'm more always alarmed when that happens during the draft itself.
Yeah.
This is all post hoc, you know, this is the draft already happened, I guess.
Yeah, no, but here's what the interesting part to me was, the color coding of it. I'd never seen this before. Color coding they had for guys that they thought had extreme leadership skills, which Kamari Lassiter was one of those guys. He was coded in, I think, blue for being like having extreme leadership traits. There was like, you know, ones that were red had injury issues. There were like six different colors, and Twitter had deciphered what they all meant by the time that thing went up there. Like, okay, this is a guy who transferred a couple of times, probably. You know, this is a guy with injury issues. I thought that was cool just to see the thing, you know, the thought process, even behind a bad front office, what the thought process looked like.
It does come into like, okay, yeah, do you want your players to see where you were power ranked, where they had power ranked you?
Yeah.
Where you head into the draft. Like, oh, I see that you basically took me because I was the last guy left. You like all those other guys ahead of me.
And I guess Big Board is a misnomer for what showed up on Hard Knocks, because it was actually the draft with all the names. So it wasn't the Giants big board, but the color coding did show what they thought about the traits of some of those guys, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you, heading into the 9 o'clock hour. To me, the biggest thing, if you're a Texan fan, the biggest thing, and I think the thing that has both Seth and I really excited about this game on Friday, and given where at least one player is right now medically for the Texans, this is a huge storyline for this game on Friday against the Steelers. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.